Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
Hey, welcome to Hagman, where the truth can't be silenced. Hagman Report Live. That's where you'll find all of the audio and video assets, programs, HagmanReportLive.com. HagmanReport.com for print information, show prep, necessary information, contributor articles, things of that nature. HagmanReport.com. Bookmark both of those, please. HagmanStore.com. And that's where you'll buy some fantastic coffee. I just want to tell you a real quick little anecdote. I was going through the ultra-secret recipes of the coffee blends, or the blends of beans, okay? And I wanted to just tweak Detective's Choice because I wanted it to be, perfect. A little, just a tad on the smoother side going, with the last sip. And the roaster achieved it. 100%. So, if you liked Detective's Choice before, it's the same, it's hyper-caffeinated. It's a dark roast. But it's, so smooth. I'm drinking a cup right now, just after having finished my cigar. So I had a cigar along with my coffee. I'm telling you, they go great together. All right. Day two of the Commie Fest, otherwise known as the Democratic National Convention. Yeah. I've never seen so many socialists and communists gathered in one place or in one screen, virtual reality. Of course, AOC, doing her bidding for Bernie Sanders.
She's my favorite.
You know, Eric the Tech, I can see her on your arm. No, I can't. Believe me. I've never seen, look, Eric's an easygoing guy.
There'd be issues.
There would be issues.
And lots of tissues.
Lots of tissues indeed. From the Department of, I wish I would have said that. Hey, Donald Trump Jr. to Democrats, if you can loot in person, you can vote in person. We don't need mail-in ballots, except now mail-in ballots and absentee ballots are two distinctly different things. Do we still have that very graphic video that caused me to have a meltdown the other day?
Don't all the videos do that to you?
Eric, which one? The beatdown, the gentleman that was beat.
Let me look for it, because right. It's buried in Twitter land.
Yeah, well, if you go to my Twitter feed, my personal Twitter feed, I believe it's Andy Knows that tweeted it, so you can find it under his Twitter. I want to play this, and the reason I want to play this, I want to play this more than one time. Not today, more than one time, but I want to make sure this is seen more than one time. I want to make sure this does not get lost. I want to make sure that this is always front and center. Because what you're seeing on screen with the Commie Fest, known as the Democratic National Convention, this, to me, is the embodiment of everything that they stand for.
I do not see it on your Twitter line.
No, you have to actually click on Andy No NGO. You have to look down, click on his name, and you'll see it. I think it's a 21-second clip or 28-second clip. It's a, you'll know, folks, if you've been watching this program, I'm sure, or not, you've seen this, okay? It's where the gentleman crashes his truck for reasons we don't know, gets out and is forced to sit on the ground by this, maybe it's on Hagman Report Twitter feed.
Killing me.
Yeah, I know, man. I know. But
at Andy's page. I'm going to find it.
Okay.
He posts a lot, so
yeah, give me a second. It's down. It's down. They've identified the culprit, of course, and the assailer, the assailant. I'm sorry, the person that was responsible for this, and you know, Portland is a reflection. I think the DNC should be held in Portland or Seattle, but Portland primarily. Simply because
I think they should become their own little countries.
Well, and this is something.
Go to war with us.
It'd be a short war. This is something I want to talk to Dr. Proctor about because we also have another video that it encompasses everything that's taking place today. Pretty much all of the issues. And when you take the Constitution right here and all of the other issues, orbiting around the Constitution, my question is, all right, what's the Constitution say about these issues and how to handle these issues? For example, you've got in Portland, you've got a communist, in my view, communist mayor, Ted Wheeler.
Video's ready.
What a muppet that guy is. Now, did that happen in Portland or is that in Seattle? Do we know? Does it say on there? I can't. You know what? Okay, it's Portland. So in my view, you've got a communist mayor by the name of Ted Wheeler, that Muppet, who in my view should be arrested and tried for, among other things, crimes against humanity. I mean, I don't know but the fact of the matter is, Portland, to the city of Portland, to the voters of Portland, you got what you asked for. You got what you voted for. And votes have consequences. This is the consequence of your vote for your mayor, for every person on the city council, the county council, and for the governor of Oregon. You voted for it. The majority who vote, and believe me, I'm sure there are conservatives out there, constitutionalists who don't want this. No sane, rational human being would want this. 80-some nights of just unbridled, unfettered lawlessness. Here's when it becomes very personal. Watch this video. And again, I'm sure y'all remember this. But be warned, it's graphic. And I'm glad it's graphic because it shows the monstrosity of these individuals. Go ahead and play it.
Before we play it.
Yeah. Get kids out of the room.
And this guy was already fist beaten too before this.
Correct.
Little incident.
Thank you. I'm glad you, yes, yes, you're right. You're exactly right.
He's pretty much knocked out already.
Well, yeah, and I think you could probably tell. Now, watch, because the offensive part really begins at the beginning, but and in fact, we'll play it twice if you don't mind. Let it loop so you can, it's only 20 seconds or so long, so you'll be able to see it in its entirety. Let's show people exactly what these people are.
Fucking loser! Fucking try to run people over! Fuck you!
Get him out of the street!
Get him out of the fucking street!
That nigga's dead, dog!
Get away!
What the fuck is he talking about, nigga? What the fuck are you talking about, nigga?
You see that moke that was standing over? They identified him. He works at the Portland airport, by the way.
Get him out of the street! Get him out of the fucking street!
That nigga's dead, dog.
Thank you for playing, man. Thank you for finding that, Eric. You're the man.
Real tough standing over a dude that's already pretty much knocked out.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what, to the people of Portland, the only thing I can say is you voted for that. And if you say, well, I didn't vote for that, well, then the people who didn't vote or voted for Ted Wheeler and Kate Brown and the others, you got to show up. You have to show up to vote. And I'm going to tell you right now, Donald Trump could damn well lose this election. People say, oh, he's got it in the bag. Okay. Yeah, let's hope so.
Hillary had it in the bag.
Yeah, Hillary had it in the bag. We saw how that worked out, right? I'm going to tell you right now, this election will decide. Well, let me just say this. I don't believe anything's going to stop after the election. It's going to go one of two ways. It's going to take parallel paths going in the same direction. Now, Donald Trump could stop this on a federal level, and I'll get asked Dr. Proctor specifically, constitutionally, what he would know what should be done. But it's going to get much worse after the election, one way or another. You're going to either have people that are going to take away your firearms and further restrict your First Amendment rights. And then I can very well see medical martial law taking place, a vaccination mandate. It doesn't have to be legal. It doesn't have to be constitutional. No. You want to fly in that plane? You want to shop at the grocery store? You want to go to school? You better have a COVID vaccination. And if you don't, then, you want to have a bank account. You better have a...
Need your COVID pass.
Yeah, COVID pass, right? I get that. You hear that? Can people hear that? No. All right. Apparently we can't shut the phones off. That's my fault. But, all right. Doesn't matter if it's... 2 a.m. or 2 p.m, or it doesn't matter what time.
Phone loves to blow up when we're on air.
All the time.
Loves to.
Bill Clinton, of course, appeared last night on the DNC. Rachel Maddow, fawning over Michelle Obama again, still. Bill Clinton, of course, being the star of the DNC, the Commie Fest last night, calling the White House the storm center instead of the control center. A lot of things were blowing at the White House when he was there. Talking about a storm.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Didn't they call that gravitas? Didn't they say Bill Clinton had gravitas? Mm. Richard Proctor, ProvisInstitute.com. He's my guest. And what I want to do is, again, just setting this up, is at his I'm going to kind of give this part of the program to Dr. Proctor address whatever he would like to address coming on here, whatever's on his heart and mind. But one thing I'd like to do at some point at his, when he says, you know, let's do it now, is I want to show him a video. And this might, I really didn't give him any notice with this video. It's an 8-minute video it's kind of a roundup of things. All right. And Just Facts is the author of this video. And it brings up several points, kind of where we're at right now. But I want to get his take on the constitutional aspect of what we should do, how we should address the issues, because these are issues that are on people's minds, from the election it covers a wide range of things. It's in totality, it's about 8 minutes long. But and I would urge Dr. Proctor to say, stop the film or stop the video, and then comment accordingly. I'm going to leave that to him, but I'm going to leave the timing up to him as well. Save the Constitution. Saving the Constitution. Dr. Proctor, ProvisInstitute.com. Sir, how are you?
Oh, very good. Glad to be here again.
Glad to have you. Glad you're here.
I did get a chance to watch 6.5 minutes of that video.
I gave you a real big heads up, didn't I? I just happened to see it.
Plenty of time. It only takes 2 minutes to watch an 8-minute video. No sweat.
Yeah. I found it right before airtime, and I thought, you know what? Rather than me, I only watched just a few minutes of it. Rather than me, because it seemed like it was going through that same cadence, that same path. I thought, you know, this is stuff that maybe Dr. Proctor would comment on. And one other thing too, I'd like to get your comment on is the fact that we've got, I believe, a constitutional crisis in the making, or maybe no one gives a damn. Kamala Harris is not eligible to be. And I think we might have talked about this before, but she's not eligible to be nominated. But no one gives a damn. So, you know, what can we do? And is it too late? I mean, I don't know. So let me just turn this over to you, because I'm not optimistic, I should say. I don't want to say I'm pessimistic. I'm just not optimistic about where things are going. So maybe you can help me out.
Oh, okay. I'm going to just give you a brief summary of what I feel that 8-minute video is. Should be an hour and a half. She shouldn't go so fast.
Yeah.
I mean, she just rolls through the stuff with gusto. Sometimes it seemed like she was talking about things that ought to be done that are against the Constitution. Sometimes it seemed like she was talking about things that are right according to the Constitution. And it was so quick, so fast, I was not able to keep up. So my feeling is that it's a very good video, but it needs to be slowed down. And you can't just stop it at a particular point because she's already covered so many subjects. How do you stop it and talk about each one of them separately?
Okay.
She spends a lot of time on the 14th Amendment. And the 14th Amendment, it's got a lot of constitutional errors in it, or at least a lot of, yes, there are constitutional errors, and there are errors when people read it and misread it over and over and over again. We've taken those three videos that were to do with the slavery. I'm sorry, those three amendments to do with slavery, 13, 14, and 15, and we have compacted them and sent them out to the world as applicable to everything that happens, every way, every shape and form. And it wasn't intended. We've expanded that thing to become as big as the Constitution itself. It was intended to keep slavery, all three of them, to get slavery stopped and get the people who were slaves citizenship and get them properly treated within their states. That's what it's about. And right. We've expanded that to be longer than the Constitution itself. She must have referenced it 6 times all the way through there, different points, different things.
All right.
She does a good job, but it's too fast to understand. I did not understand it all because it was so fast.
All right. Then let me make a programming adjustment then. Everything I said just before that, forget about it. if that's your take on the video, which I have to respect that, because it seemed densely packed.
Yes.
So, okay, so rather than do a disservice to the viewers and such, all right, let's forget about that. Let's just change plans and why don't you tell me what you think that we should be focusing on as a constitutionalists, as conservatives, as Christian conservatives. You tell me what's on your mind and things that we should be looking at with all of the news headlines, the DNC going on right now, this virtual thing going on right now. Let's just talk. Let's just have a conversation.
Let's start with what people are expecting from Washington, from President Trump. They talk about he should be out here protecting the people. She said that several times in that video, that the president's responsibility or the government's responsibility is to protect the people, except it's not the federal responsibility to do it. The federal responsibility, federal governments aren't tasked with the authority to meddle in internal state affairs. States have got to do that. Now, the states aren't. I understand that. But we're talking Constitution here. And constitutionally, federal government should not get involved at all. If they do get involved, then martial law is going to be close. And once that happens one time, it opens the door as a precedence to happen over and over and over and again. What I think we should be doing, and I've mentioned it not once but 100 times, we've got to get state militias going. That's who's supposed to do this. It's very clear, paragraph 15, that the state militia is to put down insurrections. This is an insurrection. Why doesn't anybody do it? They look for Washington. Washington's not authorized. The state is authorized. Now we go to places like you spoke about, Oregon. That government doesn't care what happens with citizens. Actually, it's encouraging these things. What did you say? 87 days now? That's almost 3 months. Nightly riots, like you showed in that short video? Come on. Why isn't the government, the state government of Oregon, doing anything about this? It's completely unorthodox. It's wrong.
Right.
They're not representing anybody. They're not representing anybody but the criminals. You can't have that kind of stuff going on night after night after night and not do anything about it. Unless, of course, you want that to happen. And that's also a scary point. Have we elected so many people that want this to happen? Now, what do I mean? I mean people that want this country destroyed, people who want us taken in as slaves, people who want us controlled every second of our days. Have we elected so many people like that, that want that, that they're not going to undo these things until martial law's required, and once martial law starts, the military takes over. That's why we don't want a martial law, why we don't want federal troops. We want state troops, people protecting their own place. I don't want somebody from Wherever'sville marching in with a gun, shooting my family and friends. I don't want that. Yet that's what will happen under martial law. We can have militias. They won't be doing that. They'll be protecting us. But nobody wants to do it. No government, no state government, nothing. Everybody just ignores the only real solution. We've got to stop this, and it's got to be done by the state. And it's not enough police. There's not enough sheriff posse. There's not enough of anything that we've been paying for years and years and years. We must have a militia. That's what it's for. That's what the Second Amendment says. First line of the Second Amendment. I will read it again. I will read the first line of the Second Amendment. A well-regulated militia being. I'm going to change it a little bit. A well-regulated militia is necessary to the security of your state. That's what it says. If you don't have a well-regulated militia, you will not have security in your state. That's what that says. Everybody's concerned about arms shall not be infringed, which is important. But let's look at what the first sentence says. You gotta have a well-regulated militia for the security of your state. And it's being illustrated right now all over the country. There's no militia and there's no security in almost any state. Somewhere in every state, there are riots going on that are not being stopped. But there, in many states, there are people standing up, but they're not standing up as a militia, so they get arrested and thrown in jail while the criminals go loose. What is wrong? It's because the people above, the people who want this to go on, have been buying the people that they want, so they'll make it go on. Now, that's a little complicated. Let me just be very blunt. We always talk about Soros and his group. Let's call it the Illuminati, which is what it is. Okay?
Right.
The Illuminati exists to enslave the world. That's what it exists for. They use everything they can to do that. It was outlined very precisely by a gentleman called Edward Mandel House in a book called Philip Drew Administrator. It's about 200 pages, easily read, and it's an outline of how to destroy the American Republic. And they're really doing it. He was a part of, I'm just going to use the one word to clothe all these people, the Illuminati. Who's a part of it by name? All the Rothschild family that still adheres to it are. Who else? Well, the Harriman family, and that includes the Bush family. Who else? Well, the Soros group, they are. Who else? The Bill and Melinda Gates are. Yes. I can go on and on and on. If you read my book, The Liberty Series, you would know I'm just repeating what I've written so that people will know what to expect from what's going on and what's happening. We, the people, need to know. And if you don't read, you won't know. So if you don't buy the books, you'll never know. And they're the only ones in the country that teach these things. A lot of places teach a little bit. A lot of books teach a little bit. And I've quoted out of them. But to have a book all the way through that just shows the package step by step by step and uses illustrations of 20 major subjects. Guys, we're going down the tubes because we don't know we are. And we're raising our hands saying, oh, what shall we do? What shall we do? Because you're not paying any attention. Read the Second Amendment again. The first paragraph, first line says, a well-regulated militia is necessary for the security of your state. That's what it says. Why don't we listen to what it says? Everybody wants to, they say they're following the Constitution, but they don't know what it says. The only thing about the Second Amendment that's generally known is, is this last part that says the right of the people to care, to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Good. I'm glad we know that. That's a part of it. The most important part is a well-regulated militia is necessary for the security of a free state. If you don't get my books, you won't know that unless you're listening to this broadcast. That's why I say everybody in this country needs a copy of Saving the Constitution. It is the only book that teaches these principles. It's the only one. And it's only 300 pages long, so I can't put every little thing in it. But guys, it gives you the background of what's happening to us. Where's our Constitution? What's happening? The president has no authority whatsoever. I don't care what amendment you read. The Constitution gives the president no authority whatsoever to come into a state with armed forces. None. The state is supposed to have their own armed forces. That's the militia necessary for its security. Have I said that enough? No.
No. Militia, no, sadly, no.
I have not said it enough. Folks, we keep looking for a solution. It was written down in 1787.
There you go. You're right. And you know, you speak about your book, Saving the Constitution, and that's kind of the cornerstone, I believe, the cornerstone of this conversation, previous and, of course, our subsequent conversations. But at this point, you had mentioned this as well, the Liberty Series. And folks, I am a big fan of this series, and I would like to use the time today that I normally use to promote Saving the Constitution to really promote this particular series. If you're serious about understanding how we got here and what we need to do, it's all right here. And I actually put this knowledge to use in a conversation, a presentation I gave to a local group, which I haven't talked about, but I did. And I referenced the Liberty series quite a bit. So if you want a full understanding, go to provisinstitute.com, Saving the Constitution and Liberty series. All right. Now, having said that, this militia you're talking about, I find it fascinating. This morning early, I was reading about Curtis Sliwa from the Guardian Angels in New York City chasing after shooters, okay, the assailants. I was reading about the Oath Keepers as well. In another instance, I was reading about a group of bikers in the West, in another situation, as well as Stone Mountain, Georgia. These are groups that are assembled, Guardian Angels, but
they don't have any authority, Doug. They don't have any authority. They do not. They are not a militia. They are a group of guys, a mob, whatever, with guns. They have no authority. That's why they're so easily arrested for doing what they're doing, because they have no authority.
Thank you.
You could get authority from your city. You don't have to wait for the state, who will do nothing. Get your city to have one. Get your county. Get the county sheriff to have one. It's a Declaration of Independence item. When the state, i.e. state, this case, the state government doesn't do it, it falls back to the Declaration of Independence. You got to put these two documents in order. The okay. Declaration of Independence establishes the rights of man. The Constitution puts those rights in writing. If the people aren't following the Constitution, you go back to the Declaration of Independence, because that's the foundation of the Constitution. So you're back into that. But it still has to be authority. Some elected authority has to do that, or it's a mob with guns. There will be some mobs with guns because no elected authority will help. I don't understand that. I do not understand why. You talk to a mayor and the mayor says, no, I'm not going to do that. Or the city council says, I'm not going to do that. Why are they jeopardizing their own citizens? Why? These city councils, they're not being paid by the Soros group, I don't think. But what's happened in Seattle? Aren't they in the process of defunding the only protection the citizens have?
Yes.
Aren't they really in the process of doing that? And they're not forming a militia either. They're not doing anything but shooting their own people in the foot. I don't understand this.
But I think you said it, though. Have we elected so many who want to see the U.S. destroyed, or who are in the process of destroying the United States, or allowing this? I mean, is this where we're at?
This is where we're at. The Democratic Party, not the Democratic Party of the 50s. Please, don't get this in mixed up. Not the one of the 50s, and maybe even not the one of the 60s, but for sure, 50 backwards. In other words, 50 back to the 1800s and 1700s. The Democratic Party was not this kind of organization. Okay? It was not this kind. Now, today, the Democratic Party fosters the destruction of this country. They cause it. They foster it. Why so many people vote for that group of people, I have no idea. I can't even see why they can fill a convention with them. They're not these people getting up hooting, hollering to their own destruction, because the ones they're going to elect will destroy them. Oh,
that's folks, right.
We're so topsy-turvy. But most of this topsy-turvy is because people won't read and won't learn. They will not read. I'm not selling enough books. This time, this right now, I should be selling 1,000 a day. I'm not. People don't care. They don't care until your house is burned down. You don't care. Why don't you do something about it before your house is burned down? You won't know what to do unless you have some guidance that's written down. Guys, last week I got a tent revival going. Today I'm saying, Cotton pick, get busy and save yourselves. This time it's physically, not spiritually.
I think that conversation, we need to have that conversation about physically saving ourselves. Because,
yes.
There was a Berkeley columnist by the name of, let me make sure I get his name correct here. Al-Qahtani is his last name, Khalid Al-Qahtani. And he's a Berkeley columnist. The focus, the subject of his column was, this war can't be civil. Obviously, it's a play on words. I see what he did there. But he's actually calling for violent resistance against the government. Now, this is Berkeley. He's allowed to do this. Apparently by Berkeley. Dr. Proctor, is that covered under the First Amendment, for him to say, we need to violently, we need to have a violent, resistance against the government? I mean, is that covered? Is that free speech?
Yes, it is.
All right.
You can say it.
Okay.
Don't take a gun and cause it. That's not.
Okay.
But you can say it. That's covered. Okay. We got to accept things that we don't want to hear, or else if we only allow things we want to hear, then we're not following it either. You got to accept both sides.
Okay.
I mean, Zig Ziglar used to say over and over and over again, if you guys remember Zig Ziglar, you got to be over 10 years old to remember Zig Ziglar. Anyway,
I do.
He said over and over and over again, I don't have to hire that guy that looks like that, but I respect his right to look like that. Now, he said it different ways of that, but, you know, he has a right. The person has a right, as long as he's not stepping on anybody else's rights, to do and say what he wants to say. That's what the First Amendment says, all the different parts of it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's about. That's what freedom is.
Yes.
So many of us won't allow the other side. They just won't allow it. Both sides won't allow the other side.
Well, to your point, while he's allowed to say that, we conservatives, when we call for government accountability, when we say anything favorable of a freedom to bear arms or anything constitutional, we're censored, or we're not censored. I guess that would have some governmental connotations, but we're silenced by the big tech companies, including Facebook and Twitter and YouTube.
Again, communist organizations trying to destroy our country. Go ahead.
No, right. So, okay. But what I see taking place right now is what that video clip from Portland. By the way, the county courthouse, they tried to burn that down last night or the night before, or maybe both times. And the police did not respond. They were told to stand down. The Portland state police pulled out saying, what are we doing here? If you're not going to prosecute those who we arrest, what are we doing here? We're going to go someplace where they're going to, well, taking prosecution seriously. I'm paraphrasing, of course, which is why it circles right back around to you saying, yeah, we need the militias.
Keeps going back to it, doesn't it?
It does. It seriously does. Yeah.
What you just said, though, isn't that we need to have the militia. It's that we need to have the Constitution. This book, I can't get it in. The Constitution, guys. We need to have the Constitution. That's what it's all about. Here it is. There it is. Come on, Richard, get that there.
There you go.
See, I've got stuff in my background that prevents me from doing this kind of stuff. But there it is. See that book? Notice it's a little worn on the edges. Okay. Notice it has paper clips. I mean, folks, if you don't do that kind of stuff with that document, you don't deserve to have the freedoms that we have. I'm sorry. If you don't understand or will take the time to know about it, then you're getting what you're entitled to have. Oh, isn't that terrible? Terrible, terrible sentences.
No worries at all. But so, okay. I look at our country, or certain cities, which Well, was that right when I said, you know, to the people of Portland, you voted this in? I mean,
yes,
it's on you.
Yes, you're right. I just said that to the whole nation. Same thing you said to Portland.
Yeah.
If you vote for these people, you know, let's just bounce into economics for a minute.
Okay.
Just not very long, just to touch it. Economics. Our government is constantly using economics to destroy your lives. And you don't know it because you don't know anything about economics. People think they come out of college thinking socialism is, it's the same. Oh, socialism will do it. Socialism is established for one person, one purpose only, to destroy the country, to destroy the world, get the world under control, all slaves except the leaders, just like Russia was during the middle of the 19th century, 18th century, whatever, the 1900s. During the middle of the 1900s, Russia was the kind of place that the socialism will cause the whole world to be like. Venezuela right now is a typical example. They want you to do that. They want that. They want these things to happen to us. And we don't know that socialism is what's doing it. We don't know that when the government steps in and takes over a business or begins to do business, that it's a part of socialism. Even down to the local city, they decide to build a gym for the people in the city. There are already gyms down the street being run by businessmen. But they establish a community gym. That's socialism. Now, I'm right down to the level of the city. That's socialism, but we don't understand what that is because we think that's a nice thing. Government stays out of business. That's a nice thing. Government only works to protect and keep the people safe and provide a good atmosphere. That's what welfare means, to provide a good atmosphere for the for the people to prosper. That's what that's all about. And that doesn't mean building something that competes with the business people. That's socialism. Eventually, gyms like that will go away because the cities did it all. That's socialism. And we can go on and on. That's just one item that we see happening all over the country. I mean, right here where I was living in Bountiful, Utah, the city decided to do a gym. And it was a nice gym when it was finished, but it's socialism. And other gyms around the city had to close.
Hmm.
That's socialism. Do we want that? Do we want to have the government controlling everything we do? Remember, anything the government controls, they can shut down. Anything the government has power over, it can shut down. It can make it work or it can stop it, whichever way it wants to go. So today's mayor, city council, wants to have these very nice things for the people. And so they do it. And the next group comes in. So the businesses go out because they can't afford to compete. So the next guy comes and says, no, we don't want them, and shut it down. Now you don't have anything. And the businesses won't come back because they're afraid the next group will send them out of business again. We are crucifying ourselves by ourselves with our own hands because we will not learn economics. We're afraid of economics. I understand. I've seen the textbooks that you start with in an economics class. Oh my. Oh my. I think their goal is to make sure you don't know it when you finish reading. Guys, it's an easy subject.
I just got that, by the way.
It's an easy subject. I present it in my economics book so that anybody with any thought process can understand economics when they read that book. It ain't tough. For example, I just use an example. Here we are. You guys probably haven't heard of this. It's called elasticity and inelasticity of supply and demand. Wow, those are big words. And I've seen economics classes, I've been in economics classes that have studied that for weeks. Inelasticity and elasticity of supply and demand. Now, we're not going to study it for weeks. We're going to do it right now, one or two sentences. Inelastic. That's an item that's tight that you can't get enough of, i.e. water in the Sahara Desert. The price of water in the Sahara Desert will be very inelastic, but sand will be very elastic. In the jungle, sand will be, there's a shortage of sand, so therefore it's a problem. Prices will go up, you see, but there's an abundance of water, so the price goes down. You see the balance of the two? So just think of that. And if anybody starts talking about elasticity and inelasticity of supply and demand, shut it off and remember that when you're in the Sahara Desert, sand is really valuable and water, I mean, sand is not valuable and water is. When you're in the Amazon jungle, water is not valuable and sand is. And that's all there is to it. All you have to do is think it that way. And something that's very valuable is inelastic because it's tight. It's tight to use. Something that is easy to get is elastic. Who cares? Throw it out the window. That's all you need to know about those two concepts. And you knew about that before I said it because you always knew that diamonds made out of the same subject as sand, diamonds are more valuable than sand. And you knew it without my saying it. That's what I'm talking about. Economics is simple, but people don't understand it. They're afraid of it. They don't have it. But folks, my book, Economics, Bathroom Economics, teaches that and easily understood teaches the kids that, the homeschooling guys that, so that they can understand one of the most important items we have in our life today. Government is using it to destroy us. Here's another quick example. Minimum wages. Oh, that's a good thing. That helps the guy. Oh, the poor people at the bottom, they don't have enough to live on. So let's set the minimum wage at $50 an hour so they'll have enough money. Yes, 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 we'll do that. Folks, all that does is create inflation that will cause everything to cause people that are poor to have $50 an hour. That's all that does. A minimum wage just sets up a standard that's going to be the standard of poor, destitute people. That's all it does. If they're poor and destitute at $1 and you raise it to $2, they'll be poor and destitute at $2. If you raise it to $5, they'll be poor and destitute at $5. That's how it works. But people don't know that because they don't understand the concepts behind what minimum wage is about and why it causes those problems. Again, it's explained in my book so you can understand it. Socialism is explained so you can understand it. Free trade is explained so you can understand it.
I almost feel that when you and I sit down and we talk, because I've read, and I have, Bathroom Economics, Easily Understood Economics, the books that you've written, the Liberty Series, Saving the Constitution, I see people out there attempting to explain the same things you do, whether it's about the Bill of Rights or about the Constitution or about economics. And it, many times they get it wrong. Many times those people who are listening have not a clue of what you're talking about. And this is why, to me, it's so important to have this research material available when you're listening to this broadcast or watching this broadcast, whether it's the Liberty Series or all of the books available at provisinstitute.com. And at this point, I can't think of anything more important to have than the knowledge, because this book, as well, in Saving the Constitution, it provides answers, what we can do. But how can we all be on the same page if we're not going from the same set of material?
I'm astounded that conservative people are talking about people that want the Constitution are talking about the government coming in with armed troops to stop all this stuff.
That's scary. Yes.
Yeah, but they think, oh, that's a good solution. We should do that. Yeah, that's a good solution for all of your solution, because then you'll be a slave to the government. It's just the first step. As soon as the federal government does martial law universally in this country, we will see it again later on. And we'll see it again and again and again until there's nothing but that.
Okay. You know, excuse my interruption. Does that include, just so I'm clear on this, does that include the federal agencies such as Customs and Border Enforcement, ICE, and other organizations like that, the federal protection agencies to protect
them. It includes all of it.
Okay.
All of it.
So,
guys, it even includes the National Guard.
Oh.
National Guard. That's not State Guard. That's National Guard. Paid for by the federal government, organized by the federal government, armed by the federal government. It's a National Guard, not a State Guard. And all these people say, well, it's the militia. No. It's a National Guard or a national militia. And a national militia is as bad as the armed forces, a standing army. All of these things you just talked about, when they start coming in and getting into our hair in our country, in our states, then they are violating the Constitution. All of them. Now, we have some laws in our country that are actually, I would say they're good, and they're called border laws. They're borders. It establishes a country. The only reason these federal agencies go into the states is because the states are setting up non-border laws. The states that want this, I'm not going to pick a state, but I'm going to California. They have so many illegals in their state that they can swing elections with them, national elections with them. And they do. So what we have there is we have a group of people destroying their own rights because they brought so many people in without, you know, no border, bring so many people in one way or another. We're going to sanctuary city. You guys can come and live in our city and wipe it out. Not that they're bad people. It's that these people come and they use our facilities and by and large don't pay for them.
They don't have any skin in the game.
Yes, they don't have any. That's good. Don't have any skin in the game. They don't care. Many of them even bring their Mexican or their Costa Rica, whatever the flag is, with them and carry it around and say, this is our flag. Well, if it's your flag, go back there. But they're here for welfare. Welfare again. Misinterpreted. There is no such thing as welfare handouts to people. Period. That's socialism. And it's destroying our country. They say war on poverty. And they turn upside down and they socialism. Social. Social distancing. That's socialism again. Those are words of the communist society. Those are words to control you. What is social distancing? They say 6 feet. Well, I want to tell you guys to do something. If it's really 6 feet, I want you to take 2 yardsticks and tape them together and walk around and swing around and see how many people are outside of 6 feet. Okay? We don't have any idea how far 6 feet is. But the point is, that's socialism because they're destroying our freedoms to associate with who we want to. And if we accept it, that's another stone in the wall of destroying the country. Guys, we're destroying it because we don't know what we have, because we don't read anymore. We've got our cell phones and turn them into movie things and cameras and lookup stuff. And, oh, let's talk on the cell phone and chat and, oh, all these things and text. Oh boy, look at the tool I've got. Well, use it for a phone and go home and get some books and read them. That's the only way you're going to succeed. You cannot. Now, I don't care if you read them on the computer. But remember this, if the government can give it to you, they can take it away. So when they take away your computer, you haven't got anything to read anymore. Think about that. If you depend on the computer for your literature to read and study, when the government shuts down the internet, you won't have it anymore. Can the government shut it down? Yes, they can. Will they? As soon as they feel like they can get away with it. Yes, they will. Get your books on your shelf that you want.
Amen. Yeah, it's a lot more difficult to take away or burn a book than it is to, make disappear a digital file. So there it is. And, you know, again, folks, saving the Constitution, bathroom economics, Liberty series from Dr. Proctor. Again, I'm a big advocate of this because we're at a point right now where if I see another podcast about the Constitution that misquotes things from, well, the amendments to the Bill of Rights to the Constitution itself. I'm just going to, you know, it's not going to be pretty because Richard Proctor has done so much to make it so understandable. So I'm a big advocate of that. All right. I don't want to. You're on a roll here. I like that. By the way, provisinstitute.com is the website. It'll be linked in the program description box. Please, folks, do yourself a favor and supply up on their books. You're kind of on a roll here. Things that I'm just going to toss this out and then you go wherever you want, but things on my mind, among other things, the, ineligibility of Kamala Harris, and no one seems to care. The conventions themselves, including but not limited to the Democratic convention, mail-in ballots, and President Trump's dealings with the post office, hugely understood, misunderstood. Speaking of conventions, I should have said this earlier. Cortez seconding the nomination of Bernie Sanders as a candidate or for the ticket. Largely ceremonial, as I understand it, but nonetheless. So all of those have been on my mind, and there's more. But anyway, I don't want to take you off your stride. I really want this to be your time. So given the fact in the week that we've been gone, we are where we're at.
This place is turning upside down daily.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, we've got people actually saying, get off. We've got people saying that if you say anything negative about this young lady who's not a citizen, if you say anything negative about her, we're going to crucify you. Yeah. It's to the point where people are now watching the election rhetoric and going to destroy the people who don't say the right things. It's astounding where we are. And we've allowed it to happen because we've allowed these elected officials to continue to be elected. We continue to elect incumbents. The meaning of a natural born citizen. I've got this commentary in front of me now. I talked about it a little bit last week, and I'd like to talk about it again today. That young lady is not only not eligible for president, she's not even a citizen of the United States. She doesn't even have legal right to vote.
Wow.
Think about that. She's not a citizen. Why can I say that?
Well, wait. She's not a natural born citizen.
No. She's not a citizen at all. Not at all.
Huh?
Yeah. Think about it for a minute. She claimed she was born as a natural born citizen, right?
Right.
And she has a birth certificate that says it, that she was born in the, somewhere in California. Okay. She was born. They show this birth certificate and say, see, I'm a citizen. No. Both the parents on that birth certificate are non-citizens. Therefore, she is not a citizen by birth. Period. She has never been naturalized. Therefore, she's not a citizen at all. Come on, folks. That's where we are. Obama was in the same boat precisely, except he was born in Kenya anyway. He wasn't a citizen of the country either. Folks, we're being bamboozled by words that people are just throwing out. The real truth of the matter is neither Obama nor this young lady, I don't want to even say her name, is a citizen of the United States, even a citizen. I'm not talking about natural born. Obviously not that, but they're not citizens because they never got naturalized, never took the steps to become naturalized.
What do we do about this, sir? I mean,
I'm trying to do the best I can. I'm putting out books to teach these things. People have got to learn them, but they've got to learn them themselves. And the media are the biggest liars we have. They are liars, folks. 90% of what they tell you in national news is a lie. I haven't listened to a national broadcast of news for decades because I don't want to fill my mind with all the lies, all the propaganda. I haven't listened to them. People talk about things in the news. I have no idea what they're talking about because I don't listen to the news at all.
Well, okay. But if we, it's not just enough to know, is it? Because I know of that of which you speak with respect to the name we shall not mention, eligibility status, as well as Obama. But what do we do about this? Although I do know that you've written about what we need to do, but
what do we do? I can't stuff it down the, I can't go and stuff it down anybody's throat. Let me give you an illustration of why I can't stuff it down people's throat. I went regularly to the city council where I live. And everybody who's got anything from me knows where that is. Anyway, I went regularly there and I taught the Constitution every day, every meeting during their public time. I taught another principle of the Constitution. Then I went to that mayor and I said, I'd like to teach the Constitution to the citizens of the city. Let's set it up. Help me get a venue. I'm not going to charge anything. I'm just going to do it. She would not allow it. Now, how can we teach people if nobody will allow us to do anything? You go to the library. We will not allow it. Why? Because you might sell a book. We will not allow it. We are becoming so stringent, so tight, that we can't even learn or can't even teach. And then when I offer a class in my home, and I tell a lot of people, nobody comes. Let me give you another illustration of the same thing. You say, what can we do? I've got neighbors here that I'm meeting with, that I know real well. They're good people and I like them. And I've approached some of them and said, let's form a group of people in a kind of a group that we meet each month and be socialized and get acquainted and be a part of it and be ready in case we need to have some influence in our city government. Let's be ready. No, I don't want to. I don't want to be ready. And that's what they're saying. I don't want it. You ask, what can we do? I don't know. I've tried and tried. I've tried every avenue I know. Talking with people I know. Oh, yes, we're going to do that. They don't. They don't intend to. Or they're just honest and say, I don't want to. But it's the same result. I don't know what to do. I got people in my own family. Of course, that's always the norm. My children... My actual children, not my grandchildren, they're paying attention. My children say, oh, that's dad just doing it again. Oh, well, let's move on. And they have no idea what I'm talking about. People don't want to anymore. We're so apathetic.
I don't mean to overtalk you, but I think you speak for the majority of the people who are listening and watching this broadcast. I think you're in the same position as the people who are saying, you know what, to their children, adult children, this is how it should be. And you know, I've noticed that too. I've gotten a lot of correspondence, mail and emails, saying, I seem to have lost my children, but my grandchildren, not so much. They're paying attention. So it's kind of interesting, I thought, but go ahead.
Yep. Yeah, it is. It is. It's very interesting. And we've become so apathetic. So you ask the question, what can we do to stop the apathy? Well, I don't know. Go burn down a guy's house so that he'll know that there's a need.
Okay. That's one way.
Yeah.
I mean.
But that's what they're doing in Portland, and they still don't care.
That's
true. They are burning down their houses. They are burning down their city. They are burning it down, and nobody cares anyway. Oh, dear me, what will we do?
Somehow, when I was going through the channels, I stopped on a channel that always has Nazi history, you know, Nazi Germany history. And I watched big groups of people being moved by small groups of German soldiers, Nazi soldiers, to their deaths. And I was wondering when I watched that very recently. They could have overtaken the guards or the, you know, captors by just on the sheer numbers, but they didn't.
Yep, that's right. They didn't. They were herded in, and they were just herded by, oh, I know, 20 guys, and there's 100 of them.
Yeah.
Sure, sure. Someone will get hurt and maybe even killed if they resist, but they'll all be killed if they don't.
And that's what happened.
Yes, that's what happened. There's an illustration, perfect illustration. I don't want to say anything bad about these people because they'll come and get me. And everybody says the same thing. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it because nobody else will do it with me. Because we have so many I don't want to do it, so there aren't any that want to do it, or there are very, very few. You've heard you've all heard the poem. They came to get this guy, but I didn't. They came to get the school teachers, but I'm not a school teacher, so I didn't pay any attention. They came to get this person, but I'm not one of those, so I didn't pay any attention. They came to get that one. Oh, I'm not one of those, so I don't pay any attention. They came to get that one. Eventually, they came to get me, and there's nobody out there to help me.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Folks, that's where we are. You ever heard of the term, I don't want to waste my boat?
Yes. Yes.
All right. Now, let me see. Let's analyze that closely. I don't want to waste my boat. Well, you know, I've got a vote. I don't want to waste. I'm going to use the example. Constitution Party of the United States. That group of people. People don't join it. I don't want to lose my vote. I've got to vote for a DNR. I don't want to waste my vote. I'm going to vote for a DNR. Got to vote for the lesser of the two evils because I don't want to lose my vote. I don't want to waste it. Let's analyze that. We vote for one of the two evils, the lesser. Still evil, right? So here goes the evil guy into work. Now here goes the other evil guy into work. One of them's more evil than the other one, but they're both evil. They're both going to confide. What's the word I want to say here? They're both going to conflab together and create evil for you. So where's the wasted vote here? The wasted vote is voting for these evil people. Stop it. Stop saying you're not going to waste your vote. A lot of people are going independent. I'm not going to vote for either one of them. Rah, rah, rah. I'm going to vote for who I want. No, you're not. You're going to vote for who other people select. You are not going to vote for who you want. You can't propose anybody that you might want. You're an independent. You have no party. You cannot run for office. You cannot say to somebody, please run for office. Can't do it. They won't let you. You're independent. You have given up your right to vote, really. Oh, you can vote for people other people select, but you can't vote for anybody you would want to select. All these independents think they're established. I'm an independent. I'm not going to go with these parties. Okay. You can no longer count your vote. You've done it. You've thrown it out the window. You can only vote for what other people want. And most of the time, you don't want what those other people want. So you don't do anything to prevent those people you don't want from getting in. We keep electing incumbents. Folks, if we would just have this as a guideline, never vote for an incumbent. We'd have a better government. Never vote for an incumbent at any office. We'd have a better government.
All right. Then, with all due respect, how would that work in the national election this year? If you're not going to vote for the incumbent, meaning Donald Trump, then are you not voting for Biden?
No. I understand what you just said, but think about it for a moment. We're not talking individually here. We're talking the group.
Ah, there it is.
Individually, you're voting for Biden. The group would join the Constitution Party and vote for the Constitution guy and elect him.
Understood. Okay. When you were talking, I was thinking about the Constitution Party and I was thinking how important that is. And that's where I went awry. Okay. So really, and I guess this is the answer in a larger sense is to form a party, which has been formed, the Constitution Party, which adheres to the Constitution, the founding document. And fill that. People say, well, I want to start. We should start a different party. Well, there's already one out there. It's the Constitution.
Okay,
party.
Let's assume they want to start another party. They have no idea the difficulty to get on the boat. If you're going to start another party, the first thing you've got to do, organize it under the state laws. Then you've got to get enough people there or you can't do anything anyway. And enough people means thousands have to agree with you. Thousands. Why not join one that already has thousands. They just don't have enough thousands. Right. So if all the people who want to organize something that would do better than we've got would just stop running around with their heads in the sand and join a group of people who are actually trying to do this, then they would begin to do something. But they all say, oh, I don't want to be a part. I don't want to be a part of that. Not, that party's not strong enough. They don't do enough. Nobody really knows them. They don't join them. No, that. And that's exactly what's going on. And therefore, it does not get strong enough because all the people that are moaning and complaining and sitting in the back room, how bad we've got it, will not lift a finger to make it better.
That's very, very well stated. The Constitution Party is organized in a number of states, recognized and on the ballot, right, in a number of states.
Yes. I think they're 36 now.
Okay.
But it's so hard to get on ballots. So hard to get on ballots.
But
for example,
this is better than starting from scratch. So the Constitution Party seems like a great idea.
Yes, they're already. It's almost in every state. There are a few states that don't have. But let me say this. If it's not there in your state, you get in touch with the national people, you join the party, and now it is in your state. Okay? Get all your friends to be a part of it, and now you've got a force to be reckoned with. Let's just use a small example. You're a part of the Constitution Party. You would like to be in the state legislature. No, let's start back another step. You were a member of the Republican Party, and you wanted to be in the state legislature. And you knew you had good ideas, and you knew you could do something better than it's being done. So you go to the Republican Party, and you get in, they all throw you out. You'll never get there anywhere. So instead of that, go over there and join the Constitution Party. Now you're the only one around that's going to run for that office. Get all your friends in your district, your area. All the people that you go around and talk, that's in your district, it's not all the districts for state representatives, they're not very big. Go to all those people in that area that want the same things you do because they all want to get rid of the DNR guys. And you can be elected in the next, not this one, it's already screwed up. In the next election, you could be elected. You could be sitting in the state offices just by joining the Constitution Party and then talking to your friends in your community. And they elect you. You are now in the state government. It's that simple. But if you try to do that in a Republican and the DNR guys, you'll never, ever, ever get in because they don't want your ideas. They got theirs already and it's already in concrete and it's not going to change. And the Libertarian guys, they don't care about anything but having more and more liberty. And sometimes what they want to have for liberty is not the kind of things you want to have for liberty. Okay.
Liberty at a certain expense, at an unreasonable expense really the Constitution, in my view. But yeah. Okay.
Yes. Then we'll go join the Green Party. Well, they don't care about anything except the environment.
Yeah.
Let's join the Socialist Party. Oh, they don't care about anything but destroying the country. Am I running out? There's only one party that's trying to do any good. And that party is having a lot of trouble getting going because people will not get off their duffs and go help be good, help the country be better. And that's precisely the situation. If there's not somebody going on in your area in the Constitution Party, then join the party and you will become the one that's going on and you can do it.
And that, by the way, just so people have this understanding and practical understanding, if you're a member of the Constitution Party, if it's active if you're in one of the 36 states in which it's active, in the general election, you can vote for either Biden or Trump in this case.
Oh, yes.
So, I mean, yes. You're not, it's not committing you to a specific candidate in the general. It's like any other, it's like the DNR party, parties. So in terms of the allowance provided for your vote.
Let me make an illustration. I have run for auditor twice in this state, and I have run for treasurer once, and this is my second time for running for treasurer. And I have voted for Trump every time he's been up.
There you go. So there's no excuse.
Right.
Yeah.
And you can do that if you're in the independent. You can do that, but that's the only thing you can do. You can't run for office. So don't brag about being independent. Hide that. You should be ashamed. Join somebody who's trying to do something rather than just mope around complaining.
I'm sorry again. I love that. The fact that, you know, that there are people out there saying, well, I'm independent, and they wear that as a badge of honor when in fact that is something that, it's a failure.
They've thrown away their opportunity to vote, except for president. They've thrown it away.
Right.
Now they can vote for people that are not, they can vote, but they can't vote for their own person because they can't put anybody on the ballot.
Because the, yeah, thank you. Yes. Well, yeah. Who's your candidate? If you're in, I got you.
You can't put someone on a ballot in any state if you're not in a party.
Right.
Independents aren't in a party. They cannot put anybody on the ballot. They cannot put themselves on the ballot. But you see, the Constitution Party has plenty of room. Actually, you know what we do in the Constitution Party? I shouldn't really say, I could say this, it's all right. We don't have enough people for every place. So we encourage people to run unopposed in places all over the state.
You mean unopposed?
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
There's no other candidate running except the Republican. Or there's no candidate running at all. But there are not very many of those. Unopposed means you're not competing against anybody. Right. There are places.
Right.
So the incumbent just gets voted in over and over and over and over and over again. Go on. You can get nobody likes him. I don't like that guy. Everybody says I don't like that guy. You could join the Constitution Party, get your friends to vote for you, and you can take his place.
That's a very good idea.
You can do it. It's simple. It really is. We look at each county, each precinct, each area, and we say, who can we get in that spot to run? Who can we get in that spot to run? Now, I ran for treasurer before. Another guy came up and said he wanted to run for treasurer this time. And I says, no, you're not. I'm running. It's mine. You go run for auditor. I'm going to run for treasurer. No, you're not. You're going to run for auditor. That's my spot. So he ran for auditor. We're both there. He wanted to, and he is.
Wow.
You see? That's how it works. You coordinate your activities.
Wow.
Anybody who wants to be elected, join the Constitution Party, run for state representative, and go visit with all your friends in your small district, because it's not very big. Convince them your ideas are right. They vote for you. You're elected. You are now in the state representative. You're in the state government.
Do you know how many members of the Constitution Party hold state office seats, roughly?
Not very many.
Okay.
Not very many. Not very many. Because people are all voting for DNRs when they go. They don't want to vote for I got to vote for the lesser of two evils. So they get the evil over and over and over again.
Right.
That's why I say don't vote for an incumbent. That's the key right now. All the DNR guys, get rid of them all. You won't, some you shouldn't, but let's not pick and choose. Just get rid of them all and put in Constitution Party members, and by Jove, you're ahead of the game. And you can do that in the next election. The Constitution Party could steamroll over the whole country. The next one, I mean 2 years away, not four. They could steamroll over the whole country and have every representative, every legislature of the House, every House legislature in office as a Constitution Party member, every one of them, and a third of the Senate.
Wow, that would be a party, wouldn't it? I mean,
yes.
No pun intended. As I'm looking at the potential solutions here, you know, I've taken a lot of notes with your conversation here, but I've also taken a lot of notes over the last couple of weeks, and this is about the most viable solution I can see to take back our country without gunfire or without bloodshed, without, you know.
Oh yes, this would work. Now you get a state I'm going to use the state of Utah again. We've got a legislature with a preponderance of Constitution guys there. Maybe all of them, but at least 75 or 80%. You've got at least a third or maybe 25% of the senators there. There are some bad laws here in the state of Utah. One of the bad laws in the state of Utah is that no institution can, a bank can organize and be in the state of Utah unless they belong to the FDIC. That's a law in the state of Utah. It is a bad law.
Bad law, yep.
It's a bad law because what that says in essence is you must be a part of the Federal Reserve. You must follow the Federal Reserve rules and you can be shut down anytime the Federal Reserve doesn't like you. No matter what your bank is doing, no matter. They'll shut you down. They'll find a way. If you think there's a lot of banks being shut down, they're all being shut down because the Federal Reserve didn't want them there. Not because they were doing bad business, because the Federal Reserve didn't want them there. Okay, anyway, so I know how to organize a banking system that will save the banking system for your area. I know how to do it. I've explained it in volume 6 of my volumes. See, guys, it's all in my books. I know how to do that. They're called public citizens banks. They're organized outside of the Federal Reserve under the authority of the 10th Amendment and the state. But if the state says you have to be an FDIC member, then they're forcing you to be under the Federal Reserve.
Right.
Remove that. So you have a good representation, honest people wanting to do good for their people. So they take away, they remove that impedant so this bank can be organized. Now, what is the difference for this bank? Well, this bank would not send any money to the Federal Reserve. Ever. Does that matter? Oh, yes. Remember when we talked, I don't know if I've talked about the buying a car. I'm just going to say this real quick.
Yeah, I love this. Yes, go ahead.
I hope they'll understand. I'll go through it relatively quickly. I'm going to go buy a car tomorrow. I'm going to go to the dealership and I'm going to choose this beautiful car I really want. Okay? And it costs $100,000. Woohoo! Okay? Now, next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go to the bank, credit union, doesn't matter which. I'm going to go there and I'm going to ask for a loan of $100,000 to buy that car. Now, they're going to quiz me and put me through collateral, all kinds of stuff. Oh, I mean, I'm going to have to sign my life away and all these kinds of things. Check credit rating. Everything there is to check. Okay, they resistantly say, all right, you can do it. We'll do it. So I sign the paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
What does the bank do next? It sends a check. I don't care if you call it a cashier's check. I don't care if you call it a pen and ink entry. I don't care what you do. They send a check to that bank, to that credit, that dealership. Car's paid for now. The bank has paid for the car. You are on the hook for a loan to the bank. The car's paid for. You go there, you drive it away, you come home. Exciting. First of next month shows up. Now I got to make a payment. $2,000. So I go in the bank on the first day of the month and I give them a check. My value, that's value for me now, of $2,000 to the bank. What does the bank do with that $2,000? Now I asked this question of an individual the other day, very intelligent person. And that individual says, well, they credit some of it to the principal and some of it to the interest. Yeah, that's what they do, but that's not what they do. What they do is they funnel both of those principal and interest into their loan file and they loan the money out again. So they loan out my $2,000. They don't have to pay the dealership. He's already paid. He's got his money. They keep every dime you give them. The bank keeps every dime of that $100,000 plus interest. When you have paid for the car, you have given the bank wealth of $100,000+. What did they give to the car dealership? Nothing at all. What? Nothing? Of course, they wrote him a check. Yeah, but what money did they use? They used the fiat currency that they're creating when they capitalize their loans, deposits.
Right.
When you make a deposit of $10,000, they capitalize it at $90,000. bingo, 90,000. When they've loaned out that full 90,000, they go to the Federal Reserve, show all the collateral, the Federal Reserve loans them another $90,000. They collateralize that $810,000.
Wow.
They're going to loan out on that $10,000, $900,000. There's profit there of just interest of $86,000, but there's also profit of every principal that's paid on every loan. What does the bank do with all that profit? Sends it to the Federal Reserve, who sends it to Europe to come back and buy our politicians. What if you had a public citizens bank and that profit went to the state to pay for the operations of the state to cut your taxes? Oops. Where's the downfall here? Where's the downside? Now, what kind of interest will you pay? Well, these guys are interested in your loan. They're interested in you having success. They're a part of the community. You'll probably get loans at under par. You know, right now they're running loans of homes at about 2.25, 3, okay, 4. Now you could probably get it from them for 1. Because you see, these people will understand that when they write a debt, they only want to collect the payments so that they can make a profit. They will collect the payments, but they will not do the 900,000. They will have to do the 90, the first step. They have to do the first step because there's no profit if you don't. So they have to do the first step. When that money comes in, though, those profits that they're going to make, that you've paid them, will go to the state to further your state, not Europe's state. And that's the difference.
Now, you talked about this last week or the last time you were on, I think the last time or the time before that. You were saying something to the effect of, you were considering starting a bank like this, but there was a money issue, a money hurdle. Is that correct?
Yes, it's an FDIC hurdle. That's the hurdle.
So if you're operating with outside the FDIC, however,
yes, if that's allowed, then there's no problem. You just capitalize with it. You get $2 million to capitalize your bank. You start a bank. You got to have some capital. You start a bank. And
sure.
The minute that you do that, you capitalize that to 18 million, you see, immediately. You do not capitalize the 18 million. No. You do capitalize the first 2 million. You loan out that money. But you can't loan out any more than that by going to the Federal Reserve and sneaking. You can't do that. You can only loan out that much. That's not a problem. There's plenty of money. There's plenty of money. When the money begins to come in, you loan that out, and you loan that out, and you loan that out. And when it comes time to pay, you look at your profits. You send that profit to the state to offset the taxes. So the people who are borrowing the money and paying the loans, the money that they're paying, the profit of the money they're paying is going to come back and lessen their taxes. Not a bad deal. Okay?
Right.
Not a bad deal. And the money that you deposit, right now you get 0.01. $25 on $10,000 a year. Or you put it in this bank and you get, 3% times $10,000. That'll be $3,000, I believe.
Okay.
So you get $3,000 in interest instead of $25. Which one do you like? That's what a public citizens bank will do, as opposed to a Federal Reserve bank.
Are there any in existence of those banks?
Yes, there is one in existence. It's organized in 1919. In North Dakota. It's been in existence ever since. It has more banks per capita than any other state in the union. It's the solidest economy in the union. Okay? But they are still a part of the FDIC, so a big portion of their profits goes to Europe.
Okay. Now, if I may interject this question here, I'm sure there's some listeners and viewers who are coin collectors. And so they go to coin collector sites. If you ever been to one of those sites, you'll see banknotes from banks. When I say banknotes, I'm talking about, National Bank of Murfreesboro,
yes.
Tennessee, whatever. Is that what you mean?
No. We would continue to use the Federal Reserve notes until the federal government replaced them with United States notes. Then we'd use those. We continue to use the existing currency. I'm not saying that we get out of the existing currency at all. We just don't use the Federal Reserve for a clearinghouse. You don't use the Federal Reserve rules.
Okay.
You don't do any of those. You set up your own clearinghouse. It's not tough. Oh, it is tough, but it's not impossible to do.
So these, you know what? This is really interesting. These are ways to fight back that.
Oh, yes, it is.
You're a dangerous man.
Not too dangerous. Nobody pays any attention.
Oh, I don't know. There's some people listening. Now.
Volume 6 describes this precisely and what to do and what the benefits. Yes.
You're right. Yes.
It even has a copy of the bill that I wrote that I gave to Congress, the Utah Congress, Utah legislature.
I saw that in there and.
Yep.
Again, we're talking, that folks is Liberty Series. You want a template, a blueprint for, both historical, you know, what happened in history, but also what we can do. Hey, Liberty Series is great. And yeah, I'm pushing books because the knowledge here, I mean, we all need this knowledge. And I gotta say,
Turn to volume one that you've got there.
Yeah.
I think it's appendix 5. Turn to appendix 5 of volume one.
I think I have it marked. Yeah, I do.
Yeah, okay. What does that say?
Okay, appendix 5 is a variation of the game of Monopoly.
Yes. Okay, mm-hmm. Now let me explain what you're looking at. Appendix 5 takes the Monopoly game and a whole bunch of new rules all written there in that appendix. You play Monopoly with these new rules, and you begin to see what inflation really is. You get a personal view of inflation because I changed the rules just a little bit so that there's money put into the economy regularly by the central bank, okay, because there's a central bank in it. And there's the bank and a central bank, both of them.
Yep.
How about that? You do that, take the Monopoly game, buy a Monopoly game, use those rules, print some more money because you're going to have some $10,000 notes and you have to have some $5,000 notes. Well, yeah, we've got $500,000. You got to have $1,000 notes, $5,000 notes, $10,000 notes. You may even need a $20,000 note before this game's over, or even a $50,000. There's all kinds of things in there that help the prices move according to how much money is put into the economy. It gives you a precise analysis. All you got to do is do that, and you will understand inflation better than anybody else does. It's right there in the book, just for you. All the rules.
I will make an admission. That's one section I didn't do. I mean,
that's all right. But, it's there.
But here it is, and it's rather interesting too. When you look at this, I can see what you're saying.
You look at the multiplication chart that's towards the end.
Yeah, I see that.
That's the factor of how much money goes into the economy. Every time the bank runs out of money, it runs to the central bank and gets more. Every time it does that, the money goes up by a number of how many times it's gone there to get more money. And all the prices change. So there's the factor. The factorial table gives you the factors of where all of those properties will be, what the rent will be, what their value is, what the lease value is, of every one of them, as what the $200 is when you go around and go, everything.
Wow. Folks, it would be good to buy this series simply for this, only because I have a feeling once or twice or three times you do that with your homeschooling children. By these rules, they're going to have a great understanding of what's going on. So will you.
Yeah, inflation becomes off. Now, I know it works because I did it around my dining room table, okay? Big table, big dining room table.
Uh-huh.
I did 8 players because that's how many that you can play with the pieces. I did personally all 8 players all the way around through the whole game. Took several days, okay, this way. You know who won? The banker. The banker won. And at the back, I say, it isn't fair, is it? I say, no, it's not fair, but that's how the world is.
You know, the house always wins in this particular, in the game that we're in. And so does the bank. But I'll be the shoe.
Yeah, whatever. I like to be the battleship, the ship. I like to be the ship. Anyway, the point I make is that that game will teach you economics and you can have a fun time doing it and you'll learn what inflation really means. It's not just numbers, what it really means.
All right. Speaking of inflation and speaking of the stimulus bills that we're seeing bounced around out there as it applies today, you know, everyone got money in their pocket. I don't think anyone has returned that money. What was it? $1,200 we got or something?
Yeah, $1,200.
All right. So, okay.
What's going on? What's happening?
Well, this is a two-part question. I guess the ultimate question I have is, we can't keep this up. What the hell's going to happen, and how bad is it going to be?
Oh, well, it's already happened. It happened in Germany in 1920, 21, 22.
That's, yeah, I figured that.
It's already happened. All you got to do is look in the history, see what happened in Germany, 20, 21, and 22. It's a good illustration. All you got to do is do that. That's where we're headed. Now, let me help another way to explain inflation. Just another way to think about it. You are going to attend an auction. Doug, you're going to attend an auction. And you arrive at this auction, you know you're going to buy some things because there's some things you've seen in the proviso that invited you. Okay, anyway, so there you go. You're going to this auction. You wind up walking in the auction and immediately they hand you a slip of paper that says you can no longer use credit cards or checks. The only money you can use is the money you have in your pocket to bid with. You can't bid with any other money but what's in your pocket.
Cool. Okay.
Okay. And you have $105.63 in your pocket.
How'd you know that? All right.
Yeah. Anyway, so here you have your $105.63. Now you go there and you go in there and there's that thing I want. So you start bidding on it. Turns out some other people want that too. And it goes up to 90, it goes up to 100, and then somebody bids 106 and you can no longer bid for it. I wanted that item. It's $106 now, and it's going up to $110. I can't get it. You notice some dude in the back of the room fumbling around. People go visit with him fumbling around. So you go back to the back of the room, see what's happening, just for interest. Turns out that that man is handing out $100 bills. I'd like five. He hands you $500 bills. Now you're back in the game again. Aha. You go up there, and you start bidding again for the item. It's up to $300, up to $350, $400. 500, 550. Ah, can't get it now. Look around the room. There he is. Go back. This time you get $1,000. 100 bills. Ah, you're back in the business. You got the first five, and now you got 10 more. Oh boy, I get it now. Goes up to 14, 15, 16. You can't get it. Has the item changed in value ever?
No.
What's the price? What caused the increase in the price?
Demand.
The money in the room. The demand is already there for the product at the original price.
You're right. I'm wrong. Yes. The availability of money. That's right.
It's the money. It's the money that causes that. It's not, you know, these people say, well, it's the rising prices. No. Price can't rise if there's no money. Rising prices do not cause inflation. That's like saying wet streets cause rain. Wet streets don't cause rain. They're a byproduct. Okay? They're rising prices is a byproduct of this money supply. In that illustration in the audit, in the auction, we can carry that on until that thing is being auctioned for $200,000. But it isn't worth any more than it was when it was being auctioned at 100, the real value. But inflation has pushed it up to $200,000.
Does it matter who the guy with the money is? Does that matter?
Nope.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. In our case, in our world, it's called the Federal Reserve. He's the guy with the money.
Right.
And he does it just exactly like the auction I just talked about. Just exactly like that. That's how the Big Depression was caused in the 30s, by the way. The man took money away from you. Prices went down. If money leaves the economy, prices go down, you have a depression or a recession. Money comes into the economy, then you have inflation. Now, there is a proviso here. If there's production to match the income, it's not inflation. That's real money now. If there's production to match, production is your key value for money, not gold and silver. Production is the key value. Production decides what the value of money is. And if you have good production, you'll have more money moving, and prices won't go up or down. You'll just have more money moving. And that's okay. You have more money moving, that's all right. As long as the money supply does not exceed production, there will be no inflation. And I've got that outlined, too, in those books, so they can see how that's done.
That's one heck of a statement. I mean, you could have a class on that statement by itself.
Yes. This whole discussion right now, we could have a two-hour class, people asking questions and understand what's going on. Yes, just this last few minutes about inflation. But you have it in your hand right there in Volume 1. You can do it and see what it is right there.
Yep. Yep. And folks, what we're talking about is in the Liberty series of books available at provisinstitute.com. If you want to be informed, and you know, I was entertained as well. These were written in a manner that it kept my,
it's not, words like what garbage or balderdash or what do you mean? Or are you mad yet? Things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so I would urge everyone, and I mean this, to go to provisinstitute.com and to pick up their copy of course, Saving the Constitution, and the Bathroom Economics as well, but the Liberty Series too. I mean, have at it, because the information here is just absolutely stunning. And I'm going to have to try that Monopoly game when my wife gets grandchildren over, or our grandchildren, I'm sorry. Wow, very interesting.
The more people you get, the longer the game is.
Wow. I wonder.
At least three or four, though. There's no end to this game until the bank wins. So be the banker.
Just like real life.
Every game has a banker and then the other players.
Yeah.
The banker is just taking care of the bank over in the side.
Yeah.
But they don't. The other players don't know that there's a central bank underneath the bank. It's on the floor in another shelf. And every time the bank runs out of money, he hops down and gets some more money out of that and puts it in the bank. That's what the rules say. And the central guy that gives us our extra money is the Federal Reserve in our country.
Yeah,
and in the world, it's called the World Bank, and it's also called the International Monetary Fund. Those are the banking guys that provide all that money for all that inflation. And that game shows how inflation works.
But Aunt Martha with the thimble doesn't have that ability.
No.
Yeah.
No. Isn't it too bad? All the Federal Reserve does is counterfeit money. If I did that, they'd throw me in jail. But when the Federal Reserve does, it's okay. Same thing, though. Same principle.
Very interesting.
And it is a private corporation, too, by the way. It's a private company producing our money, making money off of us. Private company, but if I had a private company did it, they'd throw me in jail. But that private company can do it. Federal Reserve is crucifying, is killing us, taking our money and throwing us out, destroying us. If we had the banking system I outlined, your state wouldn't be a part of that problem.
Very interesting. Wow.
There's lots of stuff in these books. They're not just books. There's stuff there.
Yeah.
In the beginning, I printed bills. I actually, when I was going to print it out the first time, I actually made $1,000 bills, $5,000 bills, $10,000 bills, and had templates in the book so you could, that won't work. I said, I'm not going to do that. Make your own. Take a slip of paper and just write on it. You should get a copier, and you should make one set and then print a bunch of $1,000. I mean, stacks. And then a whole bunch of stacks of five, a whole bunch of stacks of tens and twenties, and maybe even fifties. Depends on how many people and how long you play.
You said $1,000. I was watching Perry Mason the other night, and one of my favorite shows, by the way, back in the '50s and or late '50s, Perry Mason. No, not the new one. The original Perry Mason.
Yes.
And a client paid him $1,000 bills. And I thought, wow, you know, whatever happened to the $1,000 and the $500 bills? I know they were taken out of circulation, but was there any nefarious reason why we had them or we didn't have them? We had them and then they were taken out. I mean, what was that all about? If that's even relevant.
I think that's relevant to counterfeiting.
Okay.
If you counterfeit a 20, it's not very much loss. You counterfeit a $1,000 bill, it's a big deal. How would you like to get a $1,000 bill that was counterfeit and got to the bank and they wouldn't allow you to have it?
Well, they'd that would just suck.
Yes. Well, 20 is okay. 20 is bad enough, but a 50?
That hurts 50 too. Is
bad. 100 is bad. 500, terrible. 1,000, oh, terrible. So they took them out because of counterfeiters, I think.
Okay. It makes sense. I just thought, boy, Perry Mason.
But you must remember the real counterfeit is the Federal Reserve, and they didn't take that away.
Very, very good statement. Very good statement. Dr. Richard Proctor. Did I say that right? Did I just have a Biden moment there? Is that your name?
Yeah, you said it fine.
Okay.
I don't use that doctor stuff very often.
The reason I did that, and let me be honest and serious for a moment here. I lost it. I should not make fun of this. My doctor says I don't have Alzheimer's, dementia, or Alzheimer's. And I feel sorry for Joe Biden because, I would not want to be put on display like that or put out there like, having potentially, mental impairments. But anyway, no, I was kind of trying to set up a satire. Let me finish my sentence. Liberty series, saving the Constitution, understanding economics for the children, homeschooling. Oh, it's fantastic. Bathroom economics as well. All available at provisinstitute.com. That's provisinstitute.com.
They're all less than a meal at the local restaurant.
That's right.
And no shipping is involved. No taxes involved. We take care of it. Any shipping, we take care of
it. And shipping's a big, I gotta tell you, shipping's a big thing. When I ordered, Proctor's books, I got a big, I ordered them all, a big box. And, that thing was doggone heavy.
And yeah, it is heavy.
Shipping was no cheap, that was not a cheap date for you. So
no, but we do it anyway. We want the books out.
Yeah, that's good. All right. We got about, I can't believe this. It always goes so fast when you're on, 10 minutes left. What do you want to talk about? What should we talk about given the events of the last? Oh, I don't know.
We've really talked about the stuff though, haven't we?
You know,
going through my mind something. I just said something to a minute ago that I don't usually use that word doctor. I know it's there, and I know I had to earn it. I know I had to do it, and I had to write a dissertation. Liberty Series is my dissertation, by the way. Nobody writes 2,000 pages, 6 volumes. I did. Anyway, you guys know what BS is, don't you?
Yeah, it's...
That's what a BS... That's what shocked you, didn't I? Anyway.
Look what happened.
Yeah. Well, BS, you know what that is.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Well, that's what a Bachelor of Science degree, BS.
Uh-huh.
Well, an MS degree is more of the same.
Mm-hmm.
And PhD is piled higher and deeper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I've heard that many, many times. And
yes.
And you know, I would agree with that.
An expert is a drip under pressure.
Say that again.
Expert is a drip under pressure.
What he said. See, I wish I would think. How come we can't think of these sayings, Eric the Tech? That's good stuff. But you know what you're talking about. See, the difference, in my view anyway, the difference between a PhD at a Harvard PhD and you is, you're not crazy, number one. And second of all, in my view, your information is relevant and accurate. You know, it's not biased by an agenda or, I mean, the only bias you have is to the rule of law. Well, not even to that, but the only bias you might have is to the Constitution of the United States, as to the author or the intent of the Constitution.
Yes. Yeah. Now, what do I see as the difference between the two, me and them? When you read my books, you can understand them.
Yep. There's a book recently out. I'm not going to mention the name, and it has to do with our current economic situation. I'm not even going to tell you who I've had this program or I've had this individual on the show. And I'll tell you what, I couldn't even recommend the book because, oh my goodness. I didn't even know what I read, and it was not a pleasant read.
They're boring.
Yeah.
You can't, they don't teach anything. They just brag about themselves through their words.
Yeah.
Folks, that's no value. There's no value there. None at all. The only people can read it is their peers at that level. What good is the book? I want people to be able to understand what I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
I've used this illustration before. When I got ready to write Bathroom Economics, actually I started with Easily Understood Economics because I wrote for the high school, for the kids first. But anyway, when I started that book, first thing I did was I went to my wife's beginning economics book that she had from a class that she took. First thing I did was go to that book. I figured that will help me get some ideas of exactly how to do this. I read the first chapter. It was about the law of comparative advantage. I got to the end of the chapter, didn't understand what he was talking about, went to the test questions, couldn't answer the test questions, didn't understand it, couldn't answer the questions at the end of the chapter. Now, what benefit is a book like that? I know economics. I've been studying it since 1960. I know what the law of comparative advantage is, and I explain it in the book so you can understand it too. I couldn't understand his book. I did not have any idea. I didn't read any more. I figured I'm not going to follow that pattern. There's another item in the economics book. Just for grins here, another item. The law of creation of value. That's not in any other book, and it explains how value is created. It's not in any other book.
Can you kind of give us a thumbnail sketch of that?
Oh, yes. That money is created by production. Didn't I mention that just a few minutes ago? The value of money is created by the production. I start out in this particular episode by explaining it's an isolated group. Their own people, nobody else is joining with it. That's where we start. These people begin to all work together, and as they work together, each of them comes up with new ideas, and new things begin to happen. That becomes prosperity. Now, I'm not worried about the currency in this. I'm just talking about what's happening here. Value is being created by all of these people getting together and doing things with their own ideas and their own thoughts. Now, in comes some more people. That's okay now. It's not isolated anymore. More people come in, and their ideas create new things, and their desire for things creates more production, and they produce, and so now we have more production, so we have more value. Not inflation, because the value is only created by new production. But we have more value, more prosperity. People are beginning to have more things than they had before. People keep adding. You have babies. Those they grow up, they get married, they have children, and that creates value. Because they have to buy things for their home, and they have to buy their home, and they have to buy things for their home, and they have to buy food and all these kinds of things and clothing, and that creates more production. The more production, the more valuable the society is. Now, you want me to give you a real life example of that? The government and country of the United States of America, as compared with 1800 when we started and 1950 when we get to the point. We were the most prosperous country in the world. And what did we do? Produce. We just produced and created value. That's how value is created, by production. Not by how much gold you've got. I can't eat gold, can't wear it, can't do anything with it. There's nothing to buy, I can't use it. Not gold, not silver, not diamonds, production. That's where value is created. It discusses how that's done.
Very interesting, if you understand, and I think.
I hope that was clear.
I think it was perfectly clear. It's You know, I have a saying, if you don't work, you don't eat.
You know, production.
And that, exactly, that to me is you've got to be productive at something in order to receive value for what you do. I mean,
yes. In my sixth volume now, I talk about this very concept, yep. Production, and how production works. And I talk about gold and silver. And I use an illustration of a country has a law. They pass a law, and they're going to follow their law. They pass a law that says gold is 1 ounce of gold is worth X. Okay? Now, that's how I illustrate it. Now, silver, they pass a law. Silver is 1/16 of gold. In other words, 6 pieces of silver will be 1X. So you start out with 1 ounce of gold or 100 ounces of gold, and you'll then start out with 16 times 100 ounces of silver. So you have two sets of exactly the same, and you wind up with 2 million X's. Okay? Now, I haven't done all the numbers right here, but it's the idea. 2 million X's. You're going along, the economy is balanced, everything works perfectly. It's isolated again. Gold and silver, balanced, everything's happy, we're going along, people have babies, those babies again, families.
Mm-hmm.
Population begins to grow. As the population begins to grow, more money is needed to flow because of the production. More money is needed. You don't have any more money because you're limited to 2 million because of the X's and the 16 X's. You're limited to that. So it was fine until we had a bunch of teenagers producing, eating, running around. And all of a sudden, there's not enough money anymore. What will happen to that economy? It will go into a depression. There's not enough money to service the needs of the people. And a depression will occur. Inflation is too much money. Depression is too little money. This is an illustration of how you can have a society with too little money. They have got to find more gold and silver so they can print more money. But there isn't any more gold and silver. So they can't find any more. And they're going to follow the law precisely. That economy will die. Gold and silver will not do the trick. Let's say that they do find some more gold and silver. They double it. Now they can keep up a double the society. But when the society goes to 4 times, they're in the same problem again. And that will repeat itself over and over and over again. When you run out of gold and silver, your economy will die.
And that should be pretty clear to everyone. Yeah, so, that concept should be pretty clear.
Yeah, so gold and silver are not the way to value your money. The way to value your money is production. Done. Production. I have a basement full of gold. Oh, my. I'm the wealthiest guy in the county. There's a guy over there 4 miles to the east, and he's got a basement full of food. Who's the most wealthy?
Well, you can't eat gold, right?
That's it. Who's the most wealthy is the guy with a basement full of food. The guy with the basement full of money doesn't have any food. Where's he going to get it from? He's got to go give up his gold to get it. But the guy over there doesn't want to sell him any, or you can't buy any, or you can't get there, or whatever. Gold is not a value. Gold is a commodity. Gold is something you trade on the commodities market to try to make money. Gold is not a value. Sorry, guys. Now, am I saying you shouldn't have gold? Absolutely not. Get all the gold you can. Don't let anybody know you've got it. Get all the silver you can. Don't let anybody know you've got it. And hoard it. Never, ever part with it. Why? Because the day will come when the economy changes and you need value. Now the gold can do it because you can't buy anything if you don't have it. If you have production, you can use production to buy things. That's called bartering. That's how the world got started. But if you're living in a city or you're living in an area where you know how to do this, but nobody else does, and it's hard to train, hard to change. Get a book. Again, we're back to books again. Books are where the knowledge is. You get a book written by a guy named Ron Carter, and he's writing about, he calls it, it's a 9-volume set. Don't remember the name. The 9th volume The ninth volume of the ninth volume set will explain how gold works, why it's important to have it all the time, but never sell it or part with it.
There you go. Wow, what a lesson. And I look at today's broadcast as a really a lesson for all of us. Thank you for your patience in explaining things.
That discussion of gold and silver is also involved.
Right, right. Thank you. We are out of time. God bless you. ProvisInstitute.com. Mr. Proctor, thank you very much. God bless.